This week on The Big Show, the founder and festival director of the DC Black Film Festival, Kevin Sampson, will be our special guest to talk about the second installment of the popular fest. In addition, the Oscars announced several major changes this week, and we'll discuss them with our show correspondent, Wilson Morales of blackfilm.com. Plus, we'll have entertainment news and reviews of the latest films, including The Meg and Black Klansman. All on the latest episode of Keeping It Real with Film Gordon. Let's go. Welcome to the latest episode of Keeping It Real with Film Gordon. I am Tim Gordon, and we have an action-packed show. I've been really looking forward to talking about Black Klansman. It is finally in theaters this weekend. I'm going to review that film a little later on, as well as reviewing The Meg, as I call it, Jaws 2.0. Also coming up today on the show, a friend, colleague, and one of my mentees who I'm really proud of, Kevin Sampson, is going to join us to talk about his film festival, the DC Black Film Fest, which kicks off next week. And I'm really excited because I'm a part of that festival. And of course, coming up in a couple of minutes, we're going to talk to Wilson Morales of blackfilm.com. Got some things I want to talk to that brother about. But before we begin, beautiful hot day here in the nation's capital. Yesterday was, I don't know what you would call it, historic DC. It was like 99 degrees, sweaty, hot all day long. So it's dog days of summer is what we do. And I'm sure the weather was kind of similar going up and down the East Coast. So lots of good weather, lots of good times to go out and have fun. Beautiful day today. So we're going to have a wonderful, wonderful show. And I'm really pumped to get into this today. So normally I would kind of stall and talk about some things that I really, you know, some shows that I've watched and some pieces that are coming up. But I really want to talk about what happened yesterday. And joining us to be in this conversation and bring us what's going on in film is my friend and colleague Wilson Morales of blackfilm.com. Wilson, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's good to be on.
Hey, brother, yesterday was historic, man, for the Academy Awards, man. In the previous 90 years, they conducted business one way. They announced three sweeping changes yesterday, and I know you had an opportunity to kind of look at some of this stuff, man. So I'll just jump right into it, man. So announcement number one, they said they're going to go for a hard 3-hour cap on this show, and all the categories will not be announced live. That they will have some that will still take place, but they will play them during the commercial breaks. The second major change is that they created what they call now the Popular Film Award, or as I was reading online last night, they're going to call it the Popcorn Oscar, kind of like a Critics' Choice Oscar. And then finally, they're moving the 2020 Academy Awards from the end of February to February the 9th, which for me is huge. So I will let you jump in, Wilson. Take any of these three and talk about the significance that has really divided the membership over the last 24 hours.
I guess the 3 hours, that's a no-brainer. Who knows if they can get it under 3 hours. But the main thing, obviously, is the popular film category. You know, in a year where it's assumed Black Panther should get a nomination with all its record-breaking numbers that it's doing, you're now giving it, at least members, an easy choice. No one wants that, because if you say popular film, you know, what does that do to the films? If you make that cut, but you don't get nominated for Best Picture, that's almost like a stepchild treatment. And it's, you know, granted, we know that the ratings have been down the last few years and times are changing and you got to come up with something creative to bring in an audience. But, you know, you don't want it this way. No film wants to be included that way, especially if you don't get a Best Picture nomination. That's almost like the Golden Globes, whereas when they nominated Get Out in the comedy section because you knew it was not going to make the top five cut in the dramatic movies. or no different than when Matt Damon got nominated in the comedy section because, you know, as much as dramatic he was, it was assumed he wasn't going to make the top five. You know, so basically they're trying to create a portal, you know, so that Black Panther can be included, even though you have 10 choices.
You know,
so like if you voted yesterday, Black Panther would win in a walk because you'd have Black Panther, The Avengers, Mission Impossible, A Quiet Place, maybe Hereditary, if you're going by Rotten Tomato scores.
Now, the thing that's interesting, and I'm online with Wilson Morales of blackfilm.com. The thing that was interesting to me, because I also left out a key part that there was a lot of confusion after all these, you know, after the initial announcement was made, and then they came back with an addendum that basically said that a film can still be nominated as, you know, in the popular film category, but also be in the running for Best Picture. And to me, and maybe I'm reading into this wrong, Wilson, I would almost feel, as you said earlier, that I don't really want to win, quote unquote, the popular Oscar. I want to win, and I don't even want to call it the real Oscar, you know, like the traditional outstanding film Oscar. I don't know, man. I just don't know how to feel. And I know from reading a lot of the chatter online from the membership, it's clearly dividing the you know, the traditionalists versus, you know, the new guard that have come in now. Where do you fit? Are you still more in the traditional camp of what the Academy Awards represents and what it means?
I'm still the traditional. Think about it. All these other award shows, you know, no one ever talks about who wins Best Comedy at the Critics' Choice Awards. You know, obviously, MTV have all those awards, and no one remembers who won Best Kiss last year. You know, they always think about the top four or five. The Oscars have always been the top five films: picture, director, screenplay, actor, actress. You know, animated stands by itself. But if you don't get into that category, you know, it's funny because they said that you can get you can be nominated in both categories. Whereas, let's say, for example, I think it was they stated eons ago where an actor cannot get nominated twice in the same category.
Right.
So let's just say you had two leading roles in the same year and both were equally good. You can only get nominated for one in that category. You know, so it's weird how you would say, oh, so you can get a nomination for Best Popular Film and another nomination for Best Picture, which is the same thing that Critics' Choice has.
Yeah, it's interesting, man. So, all right. So, but here's the other part that I think only folks who are in our business, who are film critics, are really talking about. And I had this conversation last night with somebody. If the Academy Awards is going to shift their date in 2020 from the end of February, which I think was the 23rd, and move it up to the, you know, 2 weeks to the 9th, Wilson, I think that signals a significant shift for people like you and I on how we're going to cover award season, because now that means, because clearly nothing's going to come after the Oscars. So it won't be any other relevant show that will be February the 10th going out. Everything will be kind of truncated in that, you know, December to February the 9th time period, which means that, in my estimation, that the Oscars season or the award season will begin much earlier, because now we're talking, what, early to mid-November when they start sending out screeners. So if that decision holds, I think that's going to have a radical effect on film critics across the country.
Oh, yeah. It's going to, I guess, for the bigger organizations like the LA Film Critics, the BFCA, the New York Film Critics, and so forth, those who live in the bigger cities, they may not be so affected. They'll just shift it. But for all those other cities, like those who are out of Oklahoma, Cincinnati, they may get affected because some of those films do not enter their markets yet. You know, so in a way, what they're trying to do is eliminate the number of awards shows out there that can predict the winners, because everyone knows by the time the Oscars come around, you kind of have an idea who's going to win. It's not so much of a suspense between five people. It's more or less, well, he's guaranteed because so-and-so has been cleaning up the wins and all these award shows, so like any blind person can choose a winner. Whereas if you cut it 3 weeks earlier, you're eliminating award shows where maybe there's a possibility is three choices who are really in the running as opposed to that one choice who's been cleaning up with the wins.
Yeah, this is interesting. So here's another question for you, Wilson. Do you think this affects a Critics' Choice? Does it affect a Golden Globe? The Globes has normally had like a month and a half traditionally between their show and the Academy Awards, because you have to have that you know, that kind of divide between the second and third seasons of award season, or the second and third chapters. With that now being said, you're looking at maybe 3.5 weeks to a month now between the Oscars and the Golden Globes. Thoughts?
With the Golden Globes, maybe not so much, because it's still going to air afterwards. You know, it just gives, it doesn't, and at the end of the day, you know, the Globe is more or less a fan thing in a way, the way I see it. Because, you know, that's all political, as opposed to the Critics' Choice Awards, which is also still political, but they have a better sense of thinking about, you know, who wins and who wins with the Academies than the Globes does. You know, with everybody else, you know, they'll push up maybe a week or so. You know, it also affects the other award shows that's not related in terms of the Grammys and stuff like that, because obviously Oscars is one of the top 4 or 5 network programs that has the biggest audience per year. So it's definitely a game changer. But what they want to do is they want to increase suspicion, not suspicion, intensity amongst the races, as opposed to we going in there knowing who's going to win. It's a matter of like, okay, you know, obviously the year with Moonlight and La La Land, you know, we didn't know who was going to win, and we saw how that turned out. You know, so like when those 5 pictures get nominated, you want to say to yourself, okay, each one has a shot, as opposed to like, well, that one film hasn't been winning anything, so you can cross that off the list.
Yeah, I think, and I'm online with Wilson Morales from blackfilm.com, and we got about 3 minutes left. I think that what we're going to look for is probably an announcement from the organization that we belong to, which is the Broadcast Film Critics Association, that, you know, there was a time that this show would waffle between December and January. I think it's going to live in December from now on, especially in light of what happened yesterday, because there's no way, I think, you know, you can put this show and push it back that late if the season's going to be truncated in that way. It's interesting. I that to me, and I guess since I am a film critic and have been one for such a long time, that of the 3 announcements that the Academy made, that's the one that I really think that stuck out. Because right now we've been talking amongst each other for years about how the calendar is arranged. You know, you have the spring where we're starting to see, and they're starting to see income potential, you know, a la Black Panther, a la Infinity Wars, Batman versus Superman. So there's money to be made in the spring with blockbusters. We saw also this year, Wilson, that Avengers Infinity War moved up a week, or moved the summer season into the end of April. So I just think that it's going to be a reorganization of the film calendar. Maybe not immediately, but over the next 5 years, we're going to see changes that are going to be put in place because of yesterday's decision made by the Academy.
Oh, yeah, because not only that, because it's just, you know, we don't know how this popular film category is going to plan out. They may change the game in terms of people putting out their films later on as opposed to early in the summer, so that way they can get a free buzz as opposed to paying for advertising like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it remains to be seen, man. So I apologize, because generally, as a rule, man, we would have you come on and talk about what's happening in entertainment. But that is what's happening in entertainment this week, especially for us. So, Wilson, we already let you go, man. But as always, where can people read your content?
You can find it over at blackfoot.com, which is the same words you use for Twitter and Instagram.
All right, so, brother, hey, man, I appreciate your support, man, and thank you for your insight on this issue.
All right, see you later.
All right, you take care, Wilson. All right, and of course, that was Wilson Morales, editor-in-chief of blackfilm.com. He joins us at the top of every show. I really wanted to talk to him about those decisions, but as I said, the one that really stands out to me is that I think there's going to be a fundamental change coming down the line as it relates to what that calendar looks like. And in order to understand that, you'd have to understand how award season traditionally works. So I'll keep you guys abreast what we find out. We're going to take a break right now, and I'm going to come back on the other side, and it's going to be time to talk about another film festival that I'm a part of, this one as well. It's the DC Black Film Festival, and the founder and festival director, Kevin Sampson, will join us. You guys are listening to Keeping It Real with Film Gordon here at 96.3 HD4, and we'll be right back. and welcome back to the show. Coming up later on, we'll review both of this week's new releases, but enough of that. Our next guest is a film critic, a talk show host, an author, and the founder of the DC Black Film Fest, which kicks off August 16th. This brother is a visionary, a colleague, and a man I'm proud to call a friend. I'd like to welcome Kevin Sampson back to the big show. What's going on, Samps?
The crowd goes, wow. What's going on?
You are silly, man.
Thanks for having me on.
I should have played that music. Dun, 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 dun. Coming in at 6 feet tall.
Now, that would be dope, boy. Back in the day when the Bulls would come on, like, ding, ding, ding. Yeah, you're right.
So what's going on, bro? We about a week and a half away from the second installment of the DC Black Film Fest, man.
We are, man. I'm so excited. This year we're back. Just a little bit bigger. It's definitely better. I think we've been able to take everything up a notch, Tim. So I'm really excited about it. Like you said, it's about a week away. It's hard to believe it's here again, but we're here. We're in Southeast DC, and we're just going to be showing some great films from folks of African descent.
All right, man, before we talk about what's going on with this year's festival, man, let us bring the people up to date, man, because, we talking on the radio now, and it's all formal. I talk to this guy a lot. This dude and I, man, we spent a lot of time talking together because I was working on my film festival. He was working on his film festival. I'm coming to him like, Kevin, hey, man, what do you think about this? Kevin's checking right. me, telling me, Tim, man, your joint is booty, man. Change that. Don't do that.
Man, I ain't say none of
that. You didn't say that, man. I just kind of put that in there, man, to try to add a little flavor. But but seriously, though, man, I've told Kevin privately, and I've told him on the show before, and as a person who is going through the same struggle of trying to pull this together, man, you have no idea what it takes in order to do a film festival, man. And for you, Kevin, who have pulled it off 2 years in a row while I'm still searching for year one, man, I'm doing my, I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy.
Man, I appreciate it. Tim, it's one of those things, actually, for your audience that's listening, if they do their research and go back to Keeping It Real, episode 253, you and I, we talked about the State of Black Film then, right. And that was right after I had written my letter to Black, open letter to Black filmmakers, and man, it's just crazy that was 4 years ago, and now, 4 years later, we're in year two of the DC Black Film Festival. So it's just one of those things where, you just got to crawl before you can walk and run, and, just slowly building on it. So hopefully down the road, DCBFF will be one of those premier stops for, our community, as well as I think the biggest thing for DCBFF that I want to try to promote is unity. Whether it's us seeing ourselves represented on the big screen or people of other ethnicities coming to learn about our culture, because I think that cultural exchange is what we need, especially in our political climate and, the vision that we have right now. So, yeah, man, I'm excited. I appreciate the congrats.
You know what's funny? When you said you went back to episode 253, I just pulled it up. I'm like, dang you, Kevin, that's pretty good.
I don't forget, man.
Wow. June 26, 2014, man, that was 4 years ago.
And the crazy thing was, of course, then, it was an open letter of Black screenwriters. And what I had found out from writing that was that, hey, these Black screenwriters, filmmakers, they're out there. They just didn't have, the venue to be able to showcase their films or, the resources, et cetera. And so, as I tried to start a Kickstarter to do the Hollywood Blackout, which was going to be a documentary that was showing, diversity and the lack thereof. within Hollywood. And that, you know, I try to raise like $30K, which, you know, to actually make a film. And it failed. And so from there, I just said, hey, I've been doing the Rosebud Film Festival in the D.C. area. Let me go ahead and start my own, which, you know, I'd always wanted to do anyways. And so now we're here, you know. So, again, it's just all a part of the process. And one of the things, Tim, is I've really been enjoying learning, I should say, to enjoy the journey, the failure, all the lessons, the hard knocks. Are helping me to just cultivate an even better festival where, you know, we can have the resources to educate our community just in terms of, like, copyright that we're going to do this year, having the venue to be able to show some of these films. And the cool part, what I love is, you know, a lot of these films and the filmmakers, they're making the rounds right now. You know, Martha's Vineyard just is going on currently, and, you know, some of the filmmakers are in there. Black Star, you know, Bronze Lens is coming up. Right. So it's really cool to be a part of the circuit now where these great films that need to be seen can come through D.C.
Look at you, man. Bigging up Black Star. Look at you, man.
Hey, rising, what is it? Rising tide lifts all boats,
man.
You know.
Man, I am proud of you, man. I mean, and again, I know I say that, and I'm online with the festival director and founder of the D.C. Black Film Fest, Kevin Sampson. You got to remember something. This guy came into the game, and I remember when I first met Kevin, I was like, yeah, an interesting dude. You know, picture lock. You know, he's doing his thing. And we started talking, man, and, you know, I've marveled, man. I mean, all of us got our own thing, you know. You know, I'm doing my thing, you doing your thing. We got colleagues doing their thing, but I think we belong to a small fraternity, man, and I intuitively get it, man. As a guy, as you talked about learning lessons, man, you know, publicly, I had to take an L, even though it wasn't necessarily an L, it felt like an L, that I wasn't right. able to execute my film festival this year. But you're right, the lessons that were learned are only going to make it stronger moving forward, and you actually helped with that. And, you know, I loved how you called and checked in and was like, bro, you all right? Kevin, I am not, but
yeah, right. I gotta check on my man.
I am not okay, but I'm gonna be okay. But so, all right, so we got plenty of time because, you know, we're gonna have you on this next segment as well. So let's talk a little bit about the schedule in the films, man, because I'm looking through it right now. So it kicks off next Thursday. We're looking at the filmmaker-only reception, so I don't get to come to that? Is that what you're telling me?
That's Tim Gordon is always invited, man. Yes, come on through.
So I can come through. All right, so we got the filmmaker-only reception. I love how you put it in parentheses, only. Don't be none of
you. You know, it's not that we don't want, you know, the public to come, but the thing, as you know, Tim, because you saw me last year, like, film festivals do not occur without films to be able to show.
Right.
So I think it's super important that, you know, I just lift up the filmmakers and understand that, like, while I might provide the venue and the avenue and, you know, thanks to our sponsors as well, but they are the ones that make it possible. So, yeah, that's why. It's no shade.
All right, no cool. Okay, so then after the reception, we are going straight to opening night, which is going to take place at the beautiful Miracle Theater. I'm saying beautiful because last year I was there with my brother all three nights, man. I was hanging out with Kevin. I was like, Kevin, it's going to be all right. Don't stress it, man. It's going well. But this opening night, man, you've got Going It Alone, and I'm assuming that's the theme of the night.
Correct.
All right. So talk a little bit about your opening night films, man.
Yeah, man. So, you know, as the theme is Going At It Alone, it's different, you know, journeys of self-discovery. And so we have, you know, a few shorts and then we have a feature film. And these shorts, you know, it's incredible, really, how, like, they're all kind of different. One Chance is a professional boxer who is trying to choose between family and career. And so it's kind of action, drama, Odyssey is a short comedy, but it actually really showcases the D.C. area. You can just think of it as a ride on Lyft or Uber, and it kind of shows how the main character, the different characters that she interacts with, and then Othello Thawne being one where an African-American actor enrolls in a prestigious theater school in Japan. And the thing that I really love about this is it kind of shows how, like, sometimes as Americans, you know, we can have this sense of pride and, you know, haughtiness. But as you watch it, you know, the Japanese teacher just really lays him out and really gives him kind of a lesson in language. So it's really cool. And then that our feature film played at ABFF this year, Animator, and it's where, you know, an artist gains the power to draw the future and erase the past. And it's a really interesting journey as he kind of learns about himself and selfishness and, you know, with this power to draw. So it should be a really good night. And we'll, of course, have Q&As after the film so that, you know, the audience can interact with the filmmakers.
Nice, nice. All right. So then that concludes night number one, which I think is absolutely huge, man, because it kind of sets the tone for the festival.
Right.
Before we move into the rest of the festival, man, have you prepared, man, that you're going to be refreshed, have taken a nap, you're going to come, you know, looking fresh dressed like a and he'll explain. I'll let you explain last year's experience and what I want for you this year.
Yeah. Like last year, of course, like I've told you, the first year is like writing the rules, right? So like I literally walked into the theater and opened up and was like, hey, everybody, welcome to the 28th. So I'm in my shorts and my, you know, DC BFF t-shirt because like I just can't, you know, traveling across D.C. at, like, 5 o'clock, you're not going to get to your destination until, like, 7, you know? So, this year I plan to, on Thursday, I'm going to be refreshed, checked into the hotel, ready to go. You know, it's going to be different. So, try not to be as stressed.
I'm online with the founder and festival director of the D.C. Black Film Fest, Kevin Sampson. Kevin, we got a couple more minutes left in this segment, man, but I really want you to break down for me, you know, go through these films and, you know, give us some, you know, some kind of behind the scenes, or as a friend of ours, Travis Hobson, we call it, some of your inside baseball stuff, man. Because people only see like the success of a festival. They don't really understand all the work that goes into it, all the planning, all the meetings, you know, all the nights of prayer that go into right. to pulling a festival off, man. But give me 1 second. Yeah, we got about a minute to go, so I'm not gonna really get into that right now. But this is what we're gonna do, Kev. Give them information the first time, and then we're gonna give it to them again on where they can go and purchase tickets in this last minute of this segment.
Yeah, the easiest thing to do is just go to dcbff.org. If you go to our website, you can find the tickets, how to buy the tickets, you know, the schedule, the films. The event special guest, dcbff.org. It'll lead you to our Eventbrite page so that you can purchase tickets.
All right, so Kevin's not going anywhere. He's coming right back. I just wanted to put it out there if you were listening now. Go get tickets. Tell all your friends. Y'all need to be down at the Miracle because that's what Kevin needs. And it's what DC needs. But we're gonna take a break right now. We're talking about the DC Black Film Fest. You're listening to Keeping It Real with Film Gordon here at 96.3 HD4, and that's DCRadio.gov. We will be right back.
Hi, this is John David Washington, and you're listening to The Big Show. Keep It Real with Film Gordon on Film Gordon Radio.
right, and welcome back to Keeping It Real with Film Gordon. You know, coming up in our next segment is going to be time to review Spike Lee's film. Really looking forward to talking about that film with you guys. But right now, back for our second segment with Kevin Sampson, a young man I like a lot. I wish I had that the sample from the Notorious B.I.G. You know, he went from ashy to classy. I like this young man a lot. But welcome
back.
Sky
is the limit, and you know, yeah, man.
Yeah, that one. Right. You know, as an aside, Kevin, that used to literally be the theme of my first radio show. That was how it was introduced every week.
Really?
Yeah, my the producer put that together. I was like, yeah, that's pretty hot.
I like that. All right, man.
So, yeah.
Maybe I should say, take that.
No, Brian, we do what we do. But again, the DC Black Film Fest, man, you know, we're talking with Kevin Sampson, who is the founder and festival director. And you said something in the first segment that I wanted to touch on briefly before we go back to you breaking the schedule down. You talked about Bronze Lens. You talked about Black Star up in Philly, the Black Star Film Festival. There's several other ones, man, that you've talked about. You know, those are really respected festivals that, you know, are doing what they do, man. I mean, they're not, you know, I mean, you understand what I'm saying? There's certain festivals, right, like Martha's Vineyard that's 16 years in. Urban World, I think, is now maybe 18 or 19. I know ABFF is like 22. But these other festivals, man, are grinding, and they are still developing wonderful reputations. If you are now part of that circuit, that's not bad at all in year two.
Yeah, no. And that's why, you know, you got to respect the elders, I guess, as they say. But, yeah, it has been really cool just to see, you know, because I'm watching the filmmakers that are in our festival and seeing their posts and seeing that they're, you know, at these different festivals. So it just definitely lets me know that DCBFF is, you know, on the right page. But then, you know, the other thing, Tim, that I really loved is one of our filmmakers, you know, who's actually in again this year. He said that last year, you know, DCBFF was the only film festival that his film was accepted to. And I actually take some special pride in that, because I don't think that that means that his film was bad. Obviously, we have judges. You know, you served as a judge for the festival. And so the judges voted it in. But one of the things that I've been trying to do is make sure that I have a balance of, you know, the films that will bring the public in. But then also, like, truly going back to that open letter to Black screenwriters, making sure that I'm giving an opportunity to the film that might not be the cash grab, but, you know, that filmmaker just might be the one that we're talking about 5 years from now. So, you know, it's, as you know, like, planning the film festival and, you know, programming the film festival, it's super stressful, but I'm really proud, you know, that we're also getting some of those filmmakers and giving them a chance that I think, you know, really needs to be seen.
Right. I agree with you, man. So I'm talking with Kevin Sampson, a festival director and founder of the DC Black Film Fest. So starting on day two of your festival, man, we're talking about Friday now, August the 17th. You've got blocks of films, and I think you've got a total of four, starting at 9 a.m. and the last block includes at 10 p.m. That night. Talk about your Friday and break that down for us as well, Kevin.
Yeah, so, you know, Friday morning, the first block is going to be History and Hidden Figures, and it's basically showcasing, you know, our history and hidden figures that are in it. You know, these it's mainly documentary films, which, you know, we got to get some of that, those factoids, you know, of like things that we don't know about our history. Because I think, you know, especially with, you know, the slave trade and everything, our history is not as well known. And so that's what we're trying to showcase. We have some great documentaries, and then we actually have a narrative short that's called Padlock Men, and this is from Louis T. Powell, and you guys may have seen him in some TV shows as well, but he's putting on the director, producer, actor hat for that, and I think that'll be one that the crowd really enjoys. So that's our, you know, first film block. It's more of a historical portion. Film block two is Love and Heartbreak. And so this is going to showcase stories about love and sometimes, you know, the heartbreak that comes with it. I really love, you know, most of these are short, but, you know, again, these independent filmmakers just do excellent work in terms of their storytelling. You can definitely see the seeds for some features here. We have, you know, one filmmaker that's returning from last year, Leah Johnson, with Loose Keep It Tight. That's one to definitely check out. Chad Eric Smith, he's been doing really well with his sci-fi short Rumination. That was actually just at Martha's Vineyard as well. And then Chad Quinn for The Love of Music. You know, Andrea Rachel, she's also in Power. So I know how you're a big fan of Power. She's the main character in this film, and it's based on a true story about a woman who grew up in foster care, the ward of the state of New York, and her search for love and acceptance. It's a really tough film that's challenging, but I think the message will really resonate with audiences. And then, you know, there's Room Tone, which is kind of like one for the film geeks. It's directed by Morgan Cooper, about a black sound man and kind of the things that he does and love for his craft. And then The Wedding Scene is a hilarious comedy that I think folks need to check out. Stuck as well, that's directed by Prahim. And then we'll end that with a feature from Darian Silve Evans. You guys may recognize him from some commercials, but his feature, One Bedroom, like, it's funny. You always know it's a good thing when the director says, hey, my August is extremely busy because we're making the rounds with this film. But One Bedroom has been doing really well as a feature that really just looks at, you know, a breakup. And it's like literally what's happening in it. It's got that New York feel, that New York comedy, talking in the barbershop. It's definitely one you want to check out.
Nah, that's hot, man.
And then I can keep going, but I will give a pause if you wanted to say anything. But otherwise, I'll go on the block three.
No. I had a chance to see One Bedroom. I didn't judge it, but I watched it. That was pretty interesting. One Bedroom is hot. I like that one. I love Rumination, man. Rumination was a film we were gonna play. I thought I got it from you. I'm not sure exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did get it from you, but you playing it again. Yep. I'm like, hey, man, that's a good one. Rumination strong.
Most definitely, man. Yeah, and like I said, you know, Chad Eric Smith is a DC filmmaker, DC area filmmaker, and he just did an excellent job with that film. It's making the rounds and doing well.
All right.
But then, you know, in block three,
right.
We still dealing with this. And so basically what I wanted to kind of do is program a block with issues that I think we really need to deal with in society. And so it's kicking off with this film, Dishonor, directed by Terrence Turner. And this is a really incredible film. It's 39 minutes, but it is a one-woman show in which it's the same actress. She plays all six characters. I got to give her a shout-out. I think it's Mimi DeWinney, and she just does this excellent job. And once you sink into it, because I did say it's 39 minutes, but once you sink into it, by the time you get to the climax, you're hooked into it, and it really talks about the harmful practice of FGM, or female genital mutilation. So, you know, it's things that we got to deal with. Ghost Me, directed by R. Kyle Cook II, is dealing with, you know, alcoholism. Botanical Black, directed by Britt Fryer. This is a really great short film just about where black children who die become potted plants. So a florist, you know, who gets the flowers that are supposed to go to these funerals, if we think about, you know, the Michael Browns, the Trayvon Martin, it really kind of touches on that. And then, you know, Riverman, Austin's Voice is another really good one in which, you know, just this guy, Austin, I believe his last name is Harris, he just talks about what it's like being black on college and college campus and how he has to move. And then, you know, we have a bunch more films dealing with different things. I will say, Make America Black Again is playing in that, and that's directed by Leon Robinson. We all know him as, you know, Leon from Cool Runnings, Ali
right.
Cliffhanger.
Right.
And it's just a hilarious, it's a hilarious film in which he's running for president. Folks have to check it out. But this is, again, one of those full circle things. We're going back to Keeping It Real, episode 253. Leon actually had responded to, you know, the open letter to Black screenwriters. And so now to have, you know, his film in the festival, to me, that's something that I just geeked out on because it's like, wow, full circle, you know, just I'm excited about that.
All
but then closing out Friday night,
we got
United Skates. We got my man Tim Gordon, who's going to be sitting on the panel afterwards. United Skates is an amazing film from Diana Winkler and Tina Brown. And basically what it does is it just looks at skating rinks and how they're quickly disappearing from the American landscape, but what it means to the environment, the subculture, and the people who attend them as a positive place to gather. So after that, we'll talk with we'll have a panel, which, Tim, you'll be sitting on. It's moderated by WHUR's Easy Street, who a lot of folks in the D.C. area know. We have a professor, Dr. Erica L. James, Reggie Brown, who's actually in the film, yourself, and Damira Catlett from the Rabin Group. So it should be a really great conversation on how we can make Black Lives Matter through film, you know, as an art form, but creating art that, you know, educates, entertains, but yet creates empathy to Black lives.
All right, Kevin, we're on with Kevin Sampson, founder and festival director of the DC Black Film Fest. We down to our last 2 minutes, man, and we didn't even get Saturday in, man. Give me the highlight of Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday morning, it's a kid-friendly block. It's buy one, get one free. Girl Power, Daughter and Me. We're showing two films, one short, Queens in Training, and then a feature, The Possibility of Her. What we're doing is, you know, moms, dads, guardians, they can buy one ticket. If they have a daughter age 8 through to 18, their daughter will get in free. So we really just want to see a crowd full of, you know, little girls who can be inspired. After that, that conversation is going to be moderated by Janelle Henry of Districtly Speaking. Second block is going to be Friends, How Many of Us Have Them? You know, just looking at friends and, you know, different kinds of films that different deal with friendship. And then I'm really excited to have Sanford Green. If you could name, you know, Black comic artists right now, Tim, that are doing it big, drawing for Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, and Image Comics, I think you'd have a hard time finding that. But Sanford Green is a brother that is doing it big. We're going to have a fireside chat with him that people can attend, buy tickets, again, at dcbff.org to be able to meet him up close and personal, or you can hear him in our closing night film, The Rise of the Black Superhero. It's a conversation with Sanford Green, and we'll be looking at some great films then.
All right, man. Let people know before you get out of here, man, where do they go to purchase tickets for the second annual DC Black Film Fest?
Got to go to dcbff.org. It'll have tickets, information, everything you need to know. Please support the festival, support these filmmakers. Definitely want to give a shout out. You know, you're at, you know, DC Radio, so the Office of Cable Television, Film, Media, Music and Entertainment, and 202 Creates, they definitely came in this year again to support the festival with sponsorship, PictureLock PR, Arlington Independent Media, and the Virginia Film Office as well. So definitely want to give a quick shout out to them.
All right. So, brother, I would say it's going to be a minute until I see you, but that's next week, man. We are in good shape. And are you bringing the Black Reel Award with you, since it is a qualifying festival for the Black Reel Awards?
Nah, man, I like where it is on my mantle. You know, when I do my YouTube reviews and stuff, I like acting like, you know, I received one.
All right, so brother, that'll work. I will see you next week. I'm not talking to you. I'll see you next week, man. Keep doing what you're doing, and stay on the checklist, bro. Stay on the checklist.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on, Tim.
Not a problem, Kevin. You take care. All right, and of course, that is my friend, my colleague, my mentee, Kevin Sampson, or the brother I like to refer to as Samps, festival director and founder of the DC Black Film Fest, DCBFF.org. Please go and get some tickets to check us out next week. We're getting ready to take our final break of the show, and when I come back on the other side, it's going to be time to talk movies, and it's going to be time to talk Tara. You guys keep it where you got it. You are listening to The Big Show, keeping it real with Film Gordon, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Keeping It Real with Film Gordon. This is our final segment. And of course, this week's reviews are brought to you by thefilmgordon.com. Experience film through the eyes of a true film addict, me. Check out all of our film content at thefilmgordon.com. Now, this week, there are two films opening in theaters that have scary concepts, one on land, the other in the sea. But before we explore these stories, cue the music. This week, in an attempt to conduct a science experiment, man unleashes a massive terror into the world in The Meg. This film follows a group of scientists who must stop a 75-foot megalodon shark from terrorizing a beach. Now, this sci-fi horror film is directed by John Turteltaub and based on a 1997 book, Meg, a novel of deep terror by Stephen Allen. Now, the film stars Jason Statham, Lee Bingbing, Rainn Wilson, Ruby Rose, Winston Chow, and Cliff Curtis. Now, in this clip, we meet the prehistoric object of Tara.
What you people discovered is bigger than we ever thought possible.
How big is that thing?
It was the largest shark that ever existed.
A living fossil.
Thought to have been extinct for over 2 million years.
Wrong.
My God.
It's Megalodon.
He's kidding, right?
Now, after a rescue mission results in the death of two people, the leader of the expedition, Jonas, played by Statham, retires content with living out the rest of his life in anonymity. But several years later, when a group of explorers find themselves in peril, Jonas is urged out of retirement to save the group from something none of them understand or have ever seen before. A billionaire has funded a mission to explore if the bottom of the sea is actually a cloud protecting a hidden deeper level or simply the floor. Now, what they initially discover leaves them in awe, but soon they encounter something unprecedented, a prehistoric shark that is larger than any mammal to swim the sea. Known as a megalodon, the shark is the size of a large building and has been carefully hidden away since the dawn of time, trapped away from mankind. But in their quest to free themselves from his reach, they open a door exposing this dangerous being to the rest of the world. Now, 40 years after Jaws forever changed our relationship to the ocean, Turteltaub explores this man versus shark tale in an insane battle that, while full of peril, ultimately is the sum of its limited parts. Statham, who rests his formidable martial arts skills in this film, is the quiet, detached hero whose sense of honor anchors the story. Now, throughout every twist and turn, there's no doubt that ultimately will come down to him and the Meg. And while in reality, Statham, or any man for that matter, would never have a chance, Turtle Top convinces us otherwise. Now, Turtle Top draws from all of the standard cliche character stereotypes in this film. There's a huge sea creature, a precocious little girl, a greedy, ambitious billionaire, and the scared brother that serves as window dressing. But when you get right down to it, the story is all about the ultimate showdown between Statham and the Meg. Now, if Jaws is the platinum standard for this genre, the Meg is standard popcorn fare. While venturing into the deep blue sea on film remains hazardous to your health, there's still enough thrills and underwater spectacle that might make you not a fan of Shark Week, but will allow you to be a voyeur from the safety of the shore. The biggest question that the film left me with is, where's Aquaman when you need him? I gave this film a C+. Serviceable film. Entertaining. You know, it's like that painting I talk about every week. Don't stare at it too hard because you'll see all the imperfections. But The Meg is solid entertainment. Which brings us to our final film of the week. And the film, as I said, that is a month in the making for me to talk about. And of course, that film is Black Klansman. Now, this film, set in 1979 Colorado Springs, follows an African-American detective who sets out to infiltrate and expose the Ku Klux Klan. Co-written and directed by Spike Lee, the film is based on the autobiographical book Black Klansman by Ron Stallworth and stars John David Washington, Adam Driver, Laura Harrier, and Topher Grace. Now, in this clip, Ron and Flip rationalize the job.
I didn't want to say what trap, but that Peckerwood had a gun in my face. And he was an hair away from pulling the trigger.
And he didn't.
But he could have. And then I would have been dead. For what? Stopping some jerk-offs from playing dress-up?
Flip, it's intel.
Well, I'm not risking my life to prevent some rednecks from lighting a couple sticks on fire.
This is the job. What's your problem?
That's my problem. For you, it's a crusade. Mm-hmm. For me, it's a job. It's not personal, nor should it be.
Why haven't you bought into this?
Why should I?
Because you're Jewish, brother. The so-called chosen people. You've been passing for a WASP. White Anglo-Saxon Protestant, cherry pie, hot dog, white boy. That's what some light-skinned black folks do. They pass for white.
Almost 30 years after his searing examination of gentrification and police brutality and Do the Right Thing, Spike Lee returns to form, creating one of the strongest films in recent memory. I call it the absurdly entertaining racial drama Black Klansman. Now, the story opens in the early 1970s in Colorado Springs as an African-American Stallworth, played by Washington, integrates the local police department. Now, challenged to absorb the physical, mental, and verbal abuse of fellow officers and residents, Stallworth is hired to be the Jackie Robinson of the police force and placed in the records department. After enduring his share of slights from his bigoted co-workers, he receives his big break when he is given an undercover assignment monitoring a rally for former SNCC head Kwame Ture, played by Straight Outta Compton's Corey Hawkins, sponsored by the Colorado Black Student Union. Now, during this assignment, Stallworth has the good fortune to cross paths with the president of the student union, staunch black liberation activist Patrice Dumas, played by Laura Harrier, whose love for her people is only matched by her disdain for the pigs that constantly harass black residents in the community. Now, hiding his vocation from Patrice, the two soon become fast friends, providing Stallworth a welcome outlet for its ongoing stress. Now, eager to make his mark and prove his worth, Stallworth stumbles onto a new case that borders on sheer unbelievability when he establishes a dialogue with the local KKK over the phone. Now, faced with the prospect of having his cover blown with the local Klan leader, Stallworth devises a plan where he creates a dual version of himself. One, himself, over the phone, and his white colleague, Flip Zimmerman, as Stallworth in person. Now, if that sounds nutty to you, imagine the visual manifestation of the ruse on screen. Soon, Stallworth finds himself in a delicate balancing act, equal part points, spending time with Patrice and intensifying investigation into the organization, the name the Klan uses to keep their anonymity. Now, Soon forces a line within the community that may place members of the Black Student Union squarely in the crosshairs of those seeking them harm, and the Stallworth twins find themselves squarely in the center of the proceedings. Over the past 35 years, Lee has evolved from the greatest Black filmmaker that America has ever produced into a true auteur, with the release of this feature film serving as events in the past. Now, while Lee's star has somewhat diminished slightly over the last decade with films that are beneath his prestigious talent, Lee still remains a formidable force when he sinks his teeth into the right material, which gives him the opportunity to explore racial politics within the scope of cultural, social inequities of the American divide. Now, this latest film, co-written with Kevin Wilmot, who was on the show a couple of weeks ago, provides Lee an opportunity to fuse his passion for storytelling with his perspective on how such an outrageous concept can not just take hold during the 1970s, but how those events still resonate today. And when I'm talking about today, we have a march coming in to D.C. over the weekend of Divide the Right. So if there was any special time that this movie would really work, it really works this weekend, which again taps into the genius of Spike Lee as a storyteller. Now, throughout his illustrious career, Lee has rarely been presented with such a story that fits his sensibilities so acutely and accurately. This story is so Spike that if it wasn't true, it feels like something he could have written. Now, this is one of four films that John David Washington appears in this year, The Old Man and the Gun, as well as Monsters and Men and Monster. And he really, really shines in the lead role, providing equal parts empathy and comedy as the proverbial fish out of water who slowly evolves into someone who displays his love for his people while staying faithful to his mission. Now, this is easily his strongest work, and it's ironic that Lee pulls another great performance from another member of the Washington Klan. Driver is also solid, stepping out of his Star Wars universe, and it appears to have done wonders for him. He was also solid opposite Washington. This film, as you remember, won the Grand Prix at this year's Cannes Film Festival. But my estimation is Black Klansman is a very good film that misses the opportunity to be great. Now, over the course of his three-decade career, brevity has never been one of Lee's strong suits, and Black Klansman is a classic example of the axiom, less is more. There's several scenes which would have resonated with more power if they had been trimmed for effect. But remember, far be it from me to advise a Hollywood heavyweight, but hammering your point home may appeal to a generation as less literate or patient, but severely test the tolerance of seasoned film aficionados. Throughout his legendary career, Lee has excelled in creating stimulating conversation with his work, which displays all facets of the African-American experience. Black Klansman is another story chapter in the celebrated cinematic Hall of Fame. Now, over the course of his story career, Lee's work has set the bar sky high. While his latest almost reaches those celestial heights, it's still the most accomplished film he's made since 2002's 25th Hour. And for that, I will say, welcome back, Mr. Lee. I gave Black Klansman a B+. This was a film that I went in really hyped up and really wanting to like this film. And you heard the interview we did a couple of weeks ago with Kevin Wilmot, who pulled me aside before he came on our show and told me that the way that Spike is driving the message home is that looking at our current political situation of how points are driven home by the sitting president of the United States, Lee returns the favor in his film. I understand the explanation. It didn't necessarily work. That part didn't work for me. And I thought, as I said, that less definitely would have been more in this film. But this is a really good film from Spike Lee, and it's almost like a throwback to his films of the late 80s and the early 1990s. And on a weekend, as I said earlier, when the Klan will be marching in Washington, D.C., disguised as the right, this is the perfect weekend to show your protest by buying a ticket to support this film, Black Klansman. Check it out. All right, and I think that does it for us this week. And on behalf of our producer, the amazing, the talented, lovely Jessica Sturgis, we say in closing, please see something good at the movies. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you on the other side. We're out. Take care.